You're listening to in-depth coverage and analysis of the final weeks of the 2020 campaign on the COIN Podcast Network, your local election headquarters.
Millions of people have voted early, and in some parts of the country, they are expecting record turnout.
1 week before Election Day, and the results are in.
More than 30 million people have already voted nationwide.
Americans are voting early in record numbers, and there are more indications that voter turnout for 2020 could reach highs not seen in decades.
The more it's clear to people what is at stake in election, the more they respond. And what we're seeing is that people recognize that there is a lot at stake in this election.
Today, political scientist Ben Gaskins is here to talk about who's voting early, what it means, and why predicting the results based on what we've seen so far could be dangerous. It is Tuesday, October 27th, and you are listening to the COIN Podcast Network coverage of the 2020 election. So right off the bat here, Ben, it just feels to me like people are more engaged headed into the 2020 election. Would you agree with that sentiment?
I absolutely do, especially compared to 2016, where voter turnout and voter enthusiasm was far, far lower, again, across the board. You had certain segments of the population that, of course, in 2016 were incredibly enthusiastic about the candidates. But for, again, a wider swath of Americans, there was just a lot of dislike for those two candidates, for both Clinton and Trump. They were two of the most disliked candidates that I think we have seen in modern election times. And so people were not as excited to go out and vote. Many voters left the presidential election blank because they really couldn't choose which candidate they supported. Others voted third party at much higher rates than we have seen in most recent elections. And this go around, you're seeing a lot more enthusiasm and interest in voting. And that is driven almost exclusively by the fact that we have Donald Trump as our president. And he engenders incredible amounts of enthusiasm both for him and against him. And the fact that Democrats are so gung-ho to vote doesn't say very much about Joe Biden. Although Joe Biden is seen as likable, as acceptable to many voters, Democrats, and independents, he doesn't inspire that same kind of enthusiasm that Bernie Sanders or Barack Obama did. And so the turnout that you're seeing, which is already record-breaking for early voting, has a lot to do with voting against President Trump on the Democratic side, but also on the Republican side, this incredible amount of enthusiasm within the Republican Party for President Trump. And so I think that will really lead to a much higher turnout election in 2020 than we saw 4 years ago, coming closer, I think, to 2012, or perhaps far surpassing even 2008. And that high turnout, high enthusiasm environment really leads to uncertainty with how that is going to actually affect the outcome here.
Ben, in your experience, is it commonplace that the more divisive the atmosphere is in the months leading up to an election, the more people tend to make a decision to cast votes in it?
I think that is one of the things that will drive turnout. When people are very dissatisfied with the status quo, when there is a clear difference between the two candidates, and you see as much polarization as we see today, these are the things that really inspire people to vote. When people feel cross-pressured that, you know, they kind of like one candidate and kind of like a different candidate, and there isn't a very clear distinction, or they're kind of cynical about the whole process, that will tend to depress turnout. But the fact that the contrast, both in style and in substance, between Joe Biden and Donald Trump is so strong, and given the fact that, again, so many Americans are either really, really happy with the way things are going or really, really unhappy, and you do have such a divisive, polarized country, that really does tend to drive out turnout. And one of the other related factors to this is not only are we seeing political polarization, but we're seeing social polarization. So people are increasingly interacting with, discussing with, spending time with people who are similar to them culturally, but also politically. And that, you know, is problematic for understanding people on both sides and leads to a lot of fighting between political groups and social groups. And one of the things that does do is it really drives turnout because people reinforce their opinions. They reinforce their desire for a certain electoral outcome. And because people are more politically polarized, more politically sorted and socially polarized, I think that is really driving some of this huge enthusiasm, both positive and negative, for the candidates that go around. And really, I think, making the turnout going to be as high as I think it will be.
Diving a little bit further into that, of these two things, which would you consider a stronger driver in terms of getting people to the polls, the negatives of fear and anger or the positives of people pushing for change?
You know, that's a really good question. And I think they can both work. If I had to choose one or the other, I think fear and anger and those negatives are really more associated with turnout than feelings of positivity. And we saw this in 2010. The Tea Party was really riled up to oppose Obama's policies and the Obama administration. And that anger, that feeling of dissatisfaction was far more mobilizing than those that felt more positively about the administration, but perhaps weren't as driven. So that anger, that fear, that strong, strong dislike of the incumbent is incredibly mobilizing. And I think that especially in this election where we have an incumbent on the ballot who is relatively unpopular and highly polarizing, you don't need a strongly positive candidate in order to convince people to show up and vote. Joe Biden is effectively a generic Democrat, and that is not getting in the way of Democrats and Democrat leaders from showing up at the polls because the antipathy towards Trump is so strong. So it can go both ways, but I think in this case, a negative polarization and negative feelings towards a candidate can be just as powerful, if not more so, than voting for somebody. Even though, again, enthusiasm for Donald Trump among Donald Trump voters is higher than enthusiasm for Joe Biden is among Joe Biden voters, that doesn't matter because those Joe Biden voters are showing up to vote against Donald Trump.
Traditionally, voter participation for the last several presidential elections in the United States hovers somewhere between 50 and 55%. According to most analysis, it hasn't crossed 60% since the late 1960s. Americans used to vote in much higher numbers, particularly before the turn of the 20th century when turnout was significantly higher than it is today. Why do you think that is?
That is a great question that has a lot of history behind that. And part of it has to do with back in the 19th century, the political bosses that existed in most big cities would incentivize turnout by providing benefits or jobs or rewards or some kind of tangible reward for showing up and voting for the candidates or the party that the boss controls. And as a result, these material benefits really drove a lot of voters who were very poor, who were not particularly interested in sort of political ideology to show up at the polls and vote. Those kinds of material incentives to vote have really gone by the wayside. And so by the time you get into the 20th century, turnout goes down to roughly what it is today. But people turn out now, not because they are going to get something tangible like a side payment or any kind of material benefits. And also, they don't turn out because they think their vote is ultimately going to matter. Because if you have a national election of 100 million voters, the chances are of your vote actually mattering are almost nil. And the costs to voting are fairly substantial for many people. And so from just a purely instrumental perspective, there really isn't that much incentive to vote. And so why people vote is more for to be a part of something, to be a part of a winning side, to say that they supported the victor, to really express support for a party, express opposition to a different party or a different candidate. But they're not for material reasons. They're not for instrumental reasons. And so the elections that really drive drive a lot of turnout are those that have candidates that really affect people's sense of right and wrong, really make them want to express something, and that is why they vote. So turnout in 2008 was really high, even though the election wasn't particularly close, because a lot of voters wanted to be a part of voting for the first African-American president. And so that really spurred a lot of turnout from voters that hadn't really bothered to vote in the past. And in 2020, you know, that kind of enthusiasm from younger voters, from older voters, from less traditional voters, voters that don't always show up and vote, is really going to be key to see if this is going to be one of those high turnout elections, historically speaking, or just a moderately high turnout election. 1968, just to build off that, was a year of a lot of social and political upheavals, where the partisan environment was shifting, where conservative Democrats were really trying to determine, do they vote for Nixon, who's more conservative, or George Wallace, who was far more conservative, or Hubert Humphrey, who was perhaps their party's leader. And so a lot of people were unsettled about, you know, what the party stood for. Again, it was a time of immense upheaval and instability. And people voted because the issues seemed really strong, really high, that people wanted to be a part of that process at that time to express their disgruntlement with the Vietnam War or the status of civil rights movement, their anger with the assassinations of civil rights leaders. But these elections, which are not incredibly common, where the vote is seen as close enough that their vote might make a difference, or that they feel like it can make a difference, or they are really trying to make a statement about which side they are on and how they want the country to look. These are the kind of moments that you see people, I think, be more willing to take on the cost of voting and turn out. You have to have these exciting issues, these big, important issues that the average voter can understand and very clearly know where they stand on that issue.
With a lot of those things that you mentioned, the being a part of something, the divisiveness that we've talked about, the upheaval, the strong support among Donald Trump supporters, when you think of those elections, whether it be 68, whether it be 2000, whether it be 2008, where we had a good amount of voter turnout, do you see a scenario in which turnout in 2020 will exceed that?
I do, in part because, you know, again, with the pandemic, the assumption was this election is going to be a free-for-all, that a lot of people are going to be too scared to vote because they're worried about getting sick. And so this is going to be hugely depressing on the turnout. But I really do think that given all of the environmental and political and social issues that we are confronting today, that the pandemic is ultimately going to, if anything, lead to a higher turnout than a lower turnout. And because so many states are expanding mail voting and early voting to try to encourage people to vote not on election day, to not stand in long lines crowded with each other because of the pandemic, I think that will increase the likelihood that this election might be, if not the highest turnout in recent memory, certainly among the highest turnout, given what people are voting on, how motivated they are to have their voice heard, and the fact that there are a number of ways of voting that don't require people to stand in line.
Ben, do you think there are too many hurdles for the average American? Should it be easier to vote?
One of the challenges with the United States voting system is that there is not one single voting system. We have 50 different states, each with different standards of how you can register, how you can vote, what you need to vote. If you live in Oregon, all the voting is done by mail. Oregon has really adopted this approach that says voting should be as easy as possible, that registration should be automatic unless you opt out, so that there are effectively no hurdles to being able to cast your ballot. But in other states, like in Florida, in Texas, states, especially throughout the South, there are significant additional hurdles that are being put into place, whether it is voter ID requirements or onerous registration requirements. or our residency requirements, things that really can be challenging for young voters or new voters or voters with less financial means to be able to navigate. And so you see so much variation in how easy it is to vote, again, overall, but how easy it is to vote early, to vote by mail, and what kinds of hurdles you have to jump through. And I think that in and of itself is problematic. If so much of your rights as a voter and the ease with which you vote depends on where you happen to live, that is perhaps troubling for these truly national elections, because it may be the case that not all voters are treated equally. In states like Oregon, where you have higher turnout, that is going to lead to a different electorate than in states that have many more hurdles to registering and actually casting a ballot. And whether or not that actually leads to qualitatively better democratic outcomes, I certainly think that higher turnout leads to more representative government. And as a democratic norm, the more representative government is, the better quality that democracy is.
We'll be right back.
The COIN Podcast Network is your home for on-demand coverage of local news, sports, weather, and entertainment you won't find anywhere else. You can always find us on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Executive producer Ian Costello here, coming to you from the Work From Home COIN Podcast Studios. When we started our podcasts back in February of 2019, we had no idea that we would end up here. Now, a year and a half later, tens of thousands of you are listening to hundreds of our podcasts, and we need to make some changes to grow even further. That's why, starting this week, you can find all of the COIN podcasts in one place. The brand new COIN Podcast Network. From Beaver Smack to Writer's Block. From your weather to our constant coverage of the coronavirus pandemic and the protests in Portland. It is all available in one place. So, to keep hearing the podcasts you already love and to discover more of our exclusive audio content, head to coin.com/podcasts or search COIN, that's K-O-I-N, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or Podbean. Thank you for listening.
So here we are in one of the most divisive election seasons that most voters can remember, and we are seeing these constant reports that early voting numbers are up over 2016 and over 2012, and we're hearing these reports that several states are breaking early voting records. When you take all that into consideration, what do we all need to keep in mind about early voting?
Well, the first thing is that early voting and this new normal that we have is partially, again, in response to the environment that we're in with the pandemic. So this is not necessarily something that's going to continue on into the future. I think it really reflects the time and the moment that we're in. And the other thing to keep in mind, too, is whether the early voting, which is tilting heavily Democratic right now, just represents effectively moving the Democratic vote from Election Day forward, or whether it's indicative of a hugely increased overall voter turnout. Is this surge in voting going to carry all the way through the election? Or is this just a case that nervous Democratic voters really want to make sure their vote is counted and they don't want to rely on the mail to deliver the ballot on time, or they don't want to wait in line on Election Day and worry about not being able to cast a ballot, where they're worried about contracting the coronavirus while they're voting? So all of those reasons could suggest that the Democrats are just moving ahead their ballots. But nonetheless, the fact that the Democrats are banking so many votes early, I think it's a positive side for them to say that their enthusiasm and their support is significantly higher than it was in 2016. And in a close race could make a huge difference.
Ben, are there any specific demographics, whether it be senior citizens, whether it be millennials, whether it be first-time voters, that tend to vote early in higher numbers than others?
Well, certainly senior citizens are more likely to vote by mail and vote early as a result. We also see concerted efforts within minority communities, especially the African-American community, to get people to the polls early so that their voices are counted and heard. And so in general, Democratic groups and the Democratic Party really focus in on early voting and getting their voters to the polls early, much more than Republicans do. And so you really do see these voters that are traditionally in the Democratic base being more likely to vote by mail and more likely to vote early than those that are in the traditionally Republican side.
Ben, as we see these early numbers on people voting early and some of the projections that are being made because of that, is it dangerous to try and predict the results from what we've seen so far?
Absolutely. Almost every observer that is really looking at this closely is trying to make the same point, that it is incredibly dangerous to look at early voting as being a leading indicator of who is ultimately going to win, or that they are a better indicator than the polling data that we have and that we can look at. All this early voting and enthusiasm does not mean that Republicans are not going to vote. They're just going to vote later than the Democrats are. So we're getting all of these blue votes and early and likely on election day, the electorate is going to skew much more heavily towards the Republican side and to Donald Trump. If the models and polls are wrong with how high turnout actually is, especially among key demographics that don't always turn out at high levels, that can really affect the outcome. And so it is incredibly dangerous and foolhardy to merely look at the demographics of who have voted so far and see that that is in any way indicative of the final voter turnout or how people are ultimately going to vote. We are better off looking at the polls right now and trying to ascertain whether or not they are reflective ultimately of who votes, not just who votes early.
Turning our attention now from the idea of voting early to the idea of just voting, Coin6 News is reporting that some counties in the region could see turnout as high as 90%. And based on reports nationally, counties with high turnout may not be the outliers. Ben, is there any correlation between increased voter participation and results? Does one party tend to benefit with higher turnout more than any other?
Historically, yes. Historically, the Democratic Party does better than Republicans in high turnout elections. And that's by and large because more people identify as Democrats than Republicans nationwide and in many key states, including Oregon. And so as a result, the more people vote, the more likely that those voters lean Democratic, even if they are independent. And so again, in general, higher turnout elections like presidential years, Democrats will do better than off-year or midterm elections, where higher propensity voters who tend to be more conservative, who tend to be wealthier and better off, are more likely to vote and more likely to vote Republican. And so those results really will differ in low turnout years and high turnout years. On the other hand, because we are so polarized, we saw in 2018, which was one of the highest turnout midterm elections that we've seen in quite some time, that this high turnout had more of an indeterminate effect, that we did see a blue wave in the House of Representatives, where Democrats took back the House, convincingly flipped over 40 seats in the House, which suggested that this high turnout environment really benefited the Democratic Party. But on the other hand, in some states, Florida being a great example, Florida's turnout was incredibly high, but they turned out far more Republican-leaning and conservative voters. So in the same year that we have this blue wave in the House, Florida unseated an incumbent Democratic senator, replaced him with the Republican governor. And a high turnout election that may, in general, favor the Democrats, and some states very heavily favor Democrats. Other states, it may actually benefit Republicans. A high turnout race really could go either way, and it would not be surprising at all to see a high turnout election in states like Florida and states like Ohio benefiting Republicans as much, if not more so, than it benefits Democrats.
Ben, thank you for spending some time with me today. As kind of a way to wrap up here and look a little bit into the future, do you see anything happening in the coming weeks that could forever alter the way elections are conducted here in the United States?
My biggest concern with 2020 is, given all of the changes to the vote, with so many voted ballots, with so many early votes, that there are going to be ways in which the outcome may be distrusted, may be potentially manipulated, either by states or by the court system, and that this is going to lead to anger and distrust in the system that will lead to some changes. On the other hand, if this goes smoothly and there is a clear winner, there are no credible claims of voter fraud, I think for a lot of states, there's going to be a huge call to continue to open up voting to mail, to early voting, so that people don't have to wait an hour-long lines on election day to cast their ballots. If people can say, well, I voted from home and I didn't have to fill out at all, I want to continue that into the future, we really could see, especially in Democratic-leaning states, the adoption of an Oregon-like system of universal vote by mail, automatic voter registration, and things like that. But again, I think you will see a split between Republican states and Democratic states on how they respond to this election and really have two different Americas in terms of the electoral system. But of course, my biggest concern is that there's going to be electoral chaos, that the winner is going to be ambiguous, that ballots are going to be questioned and potentially thrown out for a variety of reasons. And that, I think, will do a lot of damage to our system. My hope is that this will work smoothly and lead to laws that codify easy voting and vote by mail. I think that's perhaps the best way to have a high turnout, high participation election. My concerns about the ways that this election could go wrong and what that means for future elections, there are just so many different scenarios, and many of them are really just not good.
Ben Gaskins, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Talk to you later.
Have a great day.
You can find all of our campaign coverage, including all 8 podcasts previewing the election, on coin.com. That will do it for us today. We will talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Coin Podcast Network. You can listen to more great Coin podcasts on coin.com/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Please listen, download, subscribe, and review.